It's no secret that many of the top rappers are addicts. In fact, many fans think it's cool. However, what most fans don't realize is the harsh reality behind addiction. And while some rappers have won, others have tragically lost the battle to addiction. And this is rap's worst drug addicts. To begin this list, it would be a shame if we didn't start with one of hip-hop's greatest, Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne is often cited as the rapper who influenced the modern sound and image of hip-hop. However, his influence isn't just about inspiring people to rap, but also something much worse, substance abuse, specifically lean. In fact, many in the hip-hop community credit Lil Wayne with the resurgence of lean as a drug of choice for many young rappers in the late 2000s, specifically in 2008, when Lil Wayne released a song that many cite as one of the greatest examples of a rapper glorifying drug use. The song is called Me and My Drink. In the track, Lil Wayne refers to lean as a woman, treating it as a lover, thinking about a certain somebody, that perfect somebody, sexy purple body. It sounds like Lil Wayne really loves his purple drink, but ironically, it was also in this track where Lil Wayne would mention and honor the three biggest names in hip-hop that popularized lean as a recreational drug, Big Mo, Pimp C, and DJ Screw, the latter of which infamously died because of lean. However, the fact is that too much of anything is dangerous, and this applies especially when it comes to drugs and alcohol. Eventually, Lil Wayne's unrelenting love for lean would backfire in the worst way possible. In 2012, Lil Wayne experienced just how dangerous too much lean truly is for the body. On the 25th of October that year, he suddenly suffered a seizure in his private jet while on the way to Los Angeles.
Lil Wayne's private jet made an emergency landing at an undisclosed location in Texas Thursday when the rapper suffered seizure-like symptoms, according to TMZ. As soon as his private jet touched down, the rapper was transported to a local hospital to get treatment.
Luckily, Lil Wayne would be discharged from the hospital immediately. But things were only about to get worse for him, as he would soon find out. While Weezy assumed that he was out of the woods, it was apparent his love for did really serious long-term damage to his body. Because just the following day after his apparent recovery, Lil Wayne hopped back onto his jet. However, they had to make an emergency landing again as he would suffer another seizure attack. Still, fate was in favor of Lil Wayne as he once again recovered from the horrifying accident. After recovering, Lil Wayne reassured his fans with a straightforward tweet. Thanks for all the prayers, I am good. Obviously, Weezy experiencing two consecutive seizures in a span of 2 days shocked the hip-hop world. And while you might think that those life-threatening incidents would be the end of Lil Wayne's loving relationship with lean and other substances, you'd be wrong. Unfortunately for Wayne and his fans, it seemed like he never really learned his lesson, because not even two consecutive life-threatening seizures could stop his lean consumption. On March 14, 2013, just 4 months after his double seizure incident, Lil Wayne would once again find himself at the hospital, after suffering from yet another seizure while filming a music video with Nicki Minaj. Wayne was released just a few hours later, only for him to once again return to the hospital after suffering another seizure, because he got worse. This time, his condition didn't stabilize, so he had to be taken to the ICU and restrained because he was shaking uncontrollably. And Wayne had to be placed in an induced coma. The doctors found high amounts of codeine in his system, the opiate present in lean, which led many to believe that Wayne may have gone on a lean binge prior to seizure attacks.
And the use of this drug in this drink, in this particular way, is especially bad for kids under 16 and for those prone to seizure, as apparently Lil Wayne is.
It was definitely a scary moment for Lil Wayne, his family, his friends, and his fans. It got so bad that according to reports, Lil Wayne had to be pumped by the doctors as he had apparently overdosed on cocaine. However, to minimize the damage to Weezy's public image, and to manage the situation from getting out of hand, Lil Wayne's label denied the fact that Wayne's seizures were drug-induced. To me, it's just his work ethic. It's how he put in and what he believe in, and how hard he worked, how much dedication he gives to music and his fans, and what he's trying to accomplish in life. It had nothing to do with drugs, Birdman told MTV. But I don't think anyone actually believed Birdman. Nevertheless, Wayne would be released from the hospital after staying there for 6 days. This event in Wayne's life led to discussions regarding the dangers of lean, as it had ended the lives of DJ Screw, Pimp C, and Big Mo previously, so many feared lean's next victim would be Lil Wayne. Following his hospitalization, Lil Wayne said to MTV that he would quit lean, and that it feels like death in your stomach when you stop. He then acknowledged how difficult quitting would be, saying, "Everybody wants me to stop all this and all that. It ain't that easy." Now, with everything that happened with Lil Wayne's health and his substance abuse issues, basically 4 seizures in the span of 5 months, which is crazy, whether or not Weezy did kick the habit after his seizure attacks in 2013 isn't definitive, but it's more than likely he didn't, because the same thing would happen again in 2016 and 2017. Luckily for him, Lil Wayne must have a guardian angel working overtime, because after all of that, the man is still with us, and he hasn't had a seizure since 2017. Most likely because he's chosen milder substances to use. But when it comes to rappers surviving addictions, Lil Wayne is incredibly lucky. Unfortunately, not everyone had the same luck. One of them being Juice WRLD. In Juice WRLD's case, his battle with addiction unfortunately began at a young age, and it was largely due to hip-hop itself. In an interview, he mentioned how he idolized Future's lifestyle, leading him down a path of substance abuse.
When I heard Future, the first song I ever heard by Future was Ain't No Way Around It. The second song I've ever heard by Future is Dirty Sprite, like off the first Dirty Sprite mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
And that shit had me wanting to sip lean at like 11, 12 years old, bro.
Another glaring detail about his interview was that Juice himself has stated that his early exposure to drugs was influenced by how hip-hop culture constantly glorifies substance use.
6th grade, 7th grade, I'm hearing songs about sipping lean. Those are like the real influential years, I feel like, especially for like a boy. Like finding out who your role models are, what you like, basketball, football. That's like when you start kind of choosing the dreams you want to chase, damn near.
But beneath the seemingly mild interview, what some casual listeners probably missed was that Juice WRLD said something that revealed a lot about his future. While discussing the artists who supposedly influenced and persuaded him into trying drugs and alcohol, Juice mentioned specific rappers as the artists who he hinted were very influential in his decision.
But I was also like freestyling and I was really into music. Like I used to damn near worship this shit. Like I was into music so much. So my family putting me on all this different music, Future, Gucci, all these talking about drugs, bro.
According to Juice, when he heard one of Future's songs, it made him more curious about taking drugs and what it would feel like.
When I heard Future, the first song I ever heard by Future was Ain't No Way Around It. The second song I've ever heard by Future is Dirty Sprite, like off the first Dirty Sprite mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
What Juice didn't know was this was the moment that everything changed for him. For the worse. However, Juice looked at how Future's music portrayed drugs differently. For him, his substance use was not just an escape, but also a burden. Unlike others who glamorize the overconsumption of drugs and alcohol as a lifestyle to admire, Future's lyrics reflect a complicated relationship with drugs. Juice recognized that while Future was a part of a culture glorifying drugs, he also provided a more realistic view.
We don't talk about it from a good point of view or a bad point of view, we talk about it from a realistic point of view. So it's like what we're going through, how we feel, if we're with, you know what I'm saying, if we ain't doing it at the moment, if it's, you know what I'm saying, if I'm hurting, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. It's a realistic point of view when it comes to, like, the shit that motherfuckers experiment with,
mm-hmm.
and shit that people, you know, shit that I've been through, so.
However, does that really change anything? Well, as Juice WRLD began making more music, fans started to notice how Juice internalized his struggles within his songs. For instance, the lyrics of his song, Hurt Me, highlight the reckless behavior that accompanied his addiction. Turn to a whole different person, drive my whip off the, I'm swerving. These lines illustrated how deeply intertwined his identity became with substance abuse, putting the emotional damage he experienced on display for everyone. But the thing with substances is that the more you use, the higher your appetite and tolerance will become. And as time went by, Juice's substance abuse grew worse and worse, and he was aware of it. On his song, 7 AM Freestyle, he rapped, I'm on a whole nother level, I take perkies to fight all my demons, sipping on red leaf, pour me a four and another, I love it. So Juice's openness about his addiction wasn't just in his lyrics and videos, it was evident in his public image as well. Unfortunately, as Juice WRLD's career skyrocketed, so did the grip that substance addiction had on him. The pressures of constant touring and the demands of the music industry slowly took a significant toll on his mental health. His mother, Carmilla Wallace, later revealed that Juice struggled with anxiety and depression, which often fueled his substance abuse. He was saying, it's anxiety, and this is how I'm dealing with it. As Juice got more famous, the pressure only increased, and so did his anxiety. With nothing else to turn to, his use increased as well. But despite the constant guidance and support Juice received from his mother, his unhealthy habits would soon catch up to him in the worst way possible. On December 7th, 2019, Juice WRLD boarded a Gulfstream private jet with his crew at the Van Nuys Airport in Los Angeles. The flight took off at 8:23 PM PST, bound for Chicago's Midway International Airport. However, unbeknownst to Juice and his crew, bad news was already waiting for them at the end of their flight. And this bad news would come in the form of several groups. What they didn't know was the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and the Gang Investigation Federal Task Force were all waiting for them to land in Chicago, and their timing was no accident either. It was perfectly timed as the authorities had every reason to believe that Juice's jet was carrying illegal substances. After 3 hours in the air, the jet landed safely at 1:28 AM CST. But what should have been just another homecoming quickly turned into one of the darkest nights for Juice WRLD, his crew, his family, and his fans. Upon landing, what looked like the entirety of the US justice system was already waiting for Juice WRLD and his crew. He and his friends entered the Atlantic Aviation Building lobby, where the FBI agents greeted them while waiting, along with a K-9 officer and a Chicago police officer Romero from the Gang Intelligence Unit. Almost immediately, Officer Muzillo was asked to bring in his K-9 unit to conduct a drug search of the luggage on board of the private jet. The luggage, already stacked on carts, offered a quick examination possibility. With one sniff, the K-9 alerted to narcotics in one of the luggage carts, and the K-9's interest didn't stop at one cart. As Officer Muzillo took the canine back outside, the dog signaled again on another set of bags, which almost confirmed that their hunch was right. Meanwhile, in the middle of all this chaos, something tragic was starting to unfold. While the search was ongoing, Juice WRLD's girlfriend, Ali Lottie, who had just returned from the bathroom, took a seat nearby. Juice was just across from her, but something seemed off. What happened next was among the most traumatic things they would ever experience in their lives. Turning to face Ali, Juice let out a deep, loud screech, threw his arms in the air, and collapsed. The next scene is honestly a bit too graphic to discuss, but Ali Lottie could only scream for help, helplessly watching a partner fight for his life. However, there was still a bit of hope for Juice. Two Chicago police officers were fortunately nearby and acted quickly. They tried to stabilize Juice by rolling him onto his side to clear his airway. The good thing was that the Narcan administered to Juice WRLD appeared to work, temporarily, and Juice WRLD's body seemed to relax. But while all of this chaos and turmoil was going on, behind the scenes, some equally serious events were unfolding. Unbeknownst to Juice WRLD's crew, while paramedics from Chicago's fire department transported Juice WRLD to Christ Hospital, authorities continued to search the jet's contents, and what they found was astonishing. 41 vacuum-sealed bags containing 70 pounds of marijuana and 6 bottles of coke. With Juice WRLD en route to the hospital, police attention shifted to his entourage. The first to be taken into custody was Henry Dean, Juice's personal security guard, who had firearms on him. The reason was that although Dean had a license, the permits didn't actually cover carrying a concealed weapon in an airport. Dean, who was waiting in the terminal for Juice and his team to arrive, was arrested for unlawful possession. Chris Long, Juice's photographer and videographer, was next. A firearm hidden in his camera bag brought additional charges and questions about the purpose behind their load. With two members of Juice's entourage already in serious trouble, you could only assume how utterly distraught every one of them were. But the worst was yet to come. As Juice's whole crew and family were waiting for an update regarding Juice's health status, what arrived for them was news that, to this day, still haunts them. At 3:14 a.m., Juice WRLD, whose real name is Jarrett Anthony Higgins, was pronounced to have passed away. Dr. Sean Motsony confirmed his passing, stating that the cause was an overdose of oxycodone and codeine. Later, it was confirmed that it wasn't an overdose, but rather that Juice's system was filled with far too many substances. After his passing, many artists would pay homage, but one in particular really hit home, and that was from Future, who expressed regret over the impact his music had on young listeners, including Juice in an interview he did with the Rolling Stone. During their first encounter with each other, Juice WRLD told Future that he was influenced by his music to try lean at a young age. When he told me that, I was like, oh shit, what the fuck have I done? It really bothered me. It bothered me a lot. More than that, I thought it would bother me when he told me that. But Juice is far from alone in his generation when it comes to addicts. Now, unlike our previous artists, our next rapper on this list took his substance abuse so far that it led him in the crosshairs of the US justice system, that being NBA Youngboy. A vast majority of his tracks, even the titles themselves, allude to heavy substance abuse. I mean, some of his largest songs are about substances, such as Drug Addiction, Drugs in My Body, and Life of a Drug Dealer. And when it comes to themes and lyrics, throughout Youngboy's career, he has never shied away from the fact that drugs play a major part in his music. In fact, out of 6 albums, 26 mixtapes, and 102 singles, NBA Youngboy has probably referenced his experience with drugs and alcohol in 80% of his discography. But he goes further, as Youngboy's commitment to being high out of his mind is so strong that he appears high during interviews.
What are your keys to success?
Keys to success, let's see.
And live stream.
I don't want to say, hey, I don't want to hear not one thing. Hey, look, I'm trying to, hey, you already know I'm on guard. I'm the one got to protect this right now because ain't nobody around.
But not only did NBA Youngboy rap about his frequent use of substances, but he also rapped about selling it too. I live the life of a drug dealer. Don't like to take no pictures. Unfortunately for Youngboy, this habit of rapping about selling banned substances would prove to be self-incriminating as he would put himself on the radar of the authorities. And well, as it turned out, NBA Youngboy had real heat.
The drama surrounding Baton Rouge native rapper NBA Youngboy continues. The rapper was arrested around 4:30 Tuesday morning on multiple drug charges.
You see, before all this happened, Youngboy's status as a free-roaming civilian had already been slightly put on hold as YB was already placed on house arrest in 2019 for a shooting incident that occurred in Miami. And during his time on it, he had an epiphany where he would condemn his own ways. The image that I got is that I do a lot of drugs. So I kind of get that thrown in my face. Like, oh, this is taking over his mind or something like that. He followed up by acknowledging his problem and saying that he was taking steps to make sure that he got on the right path again, regardless of how hard it was for him. I had to go to rehab 2 weekends ago, I think. Now, I'm just kind of taking on therapy from now on. I've been doing a lot of rich sipping and smoking these nasty cigarettes. Yeah, they've been tearing me up though. Man, I want to stop smoking them so bad. However, as we know now, that was all for show. After all of this was said and done, NBA Youngboy showed how empty his promises really were. As soon as he could, Youngboy further involved himself with substances and trouble. In fact, he showed them off on social media.
A little disturbing earlier today, NBA Youngboy posted a picture of him laid down with a bunch of pills. No, don't know what pills those are, and a cup, which people would believe is.
Now, remember, one of the conditions of Youngboy's house arrest was that he was not allowed to be in possession of any substances, which makes this very public post all the more baffling. When he was confronted by supervising officers for violating the terms of his house arrest by using drugs, he apparently told them that he had no intentions of stopping. So, with Youngboy's inability to stay away from illegal substances, all of it would culminate in a very surprising way. As it turned out, not only was Youngboy still using drugs while he was on house arrest, he was obtaining tons of them illegally. His operation was so large that the county sheriff's office even called his operation a large-scale prescription fraud ring.
Hey, Brian Schnee, KUTV2 News. NBA Youngboy, known as Kentrell Galden, who has been under house arrest here in Utah and Weber County, pending federal trial. He was actually arrested here in Utah by the Cache County Sheriff's Office yesterday, suspected of running a large-scale prescription fraud ring.
And it really was as serious as it sounded, as at the height of this entire ordeal, Youngboy would be charged with 63 crimes in connection with the Utah case, including 20 counts of identity fraud, 20 counts of forgery, and 20 counts of illegally procuring or attempting to procure prescription drugs. But it gets deeper than that, because apparently, NBA Youngboy really went to great lengths just to quell his addiction. To obtain his drug of choice, Youngboy would reportedly have one of his female companions call pharmacies while pretending to be a customer, complete with valid prescriptions to purchase drugs for him. And when Youngboy's home was searched after the arrest, they could find the same drugs matching the ones asked by Youngboy's companions. Unfortunately for Youngboy and his fans, all of his troubles would catch up to him. In September of 2024, Youngboy was sentenced to 27 months in prison, alongside 5 years of probation after his eventual release. Youngboy was also ordered to pay a $200,000 fine. However, despite his arrest, it's doubtful he will ever stop his habits, especially since he's in an industry that glorifies substance abuse and rewards him for it. The more he raps about drugs and alcohol, the more money he makes. The next rapper we're going to talk about is someone who slowly managed to win the love of the hip-hop community over the years, but was sadly taken away much too soon, Mac Miller. In the case of Mac Miller, he tackled various themes and topics in his songs, reflecting about his personal life, from love, feminism, life, loss, and of course, his drug addiction. And throughout his career, Mac Miller was open about the demons he battled, namely his struggles with addiction and mental health. However, like many musicians, his drug addiction got worse and worse when he entered the music industry. Like many other artists mentioned in this video, Mac would succumb to the use of heavy substances to manage the stress of a busy tour schedule. He initially used weed as a way to cope with the pressure, but like most people who struggle with substance abuse, he felt like he needed a stronger drug to handle the stress. Eventually, Mac Miller turned to lean. I love lean. It's great, he said in an interview with Complex. According to him, he started taking lean during his Macadelic tour, but things quickly turned much worse. I was not happy, and I was on lean very heavy. I was so f***ed up all the time, it was bad. My friends couldn't even look at me the same. I was lost. Over time, Mac's drug addiction would worsen, and he would shift to a heavier type of substance. And he explained why he thought he needed to in an interview.
At one point, we didn't relax me from everything. It made me more paranoid about all this happening, right? So like, I needed to get a drug that was a little more numbing, if you will, and less like in your head.
And this was honestly a scary fact for anyone to hear. Aside from that, Mac also talked about how his substance abuse developed alongside his career, hinting how dangerous it truly became as he started becoming bigger in the industry.
I'm always like, if someone's like, you want to try this? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then it just kind of f***s you up when you have a bunch of money, because like, you try a drug, you like it, and you can buy a lot of it, you know? So, I went through about everything.
But despite making it big, Mac Miller, of course, still experienced the same struggles. In his case, it took time for Mac Miller to admit that he had a problem. The bad part was he would joke about it.
Look at me, do I look like I'm on drugs to you?
Not on drugs. Drugs are on me.
Alright.
And at one point, he'd outright deny being an addict. If a bunch of people think I'm a huge drug addict, okay, cool. What can I really do? Go talk to all those people and be like, nah man, it's really not that simple. Have I done drugs? Yeah. But am I a drug addict? No. Mac said to Rolling Stone. In reality though, Mac Miller truly had a drug problem. The truth was, he was on a lot of substances. And when I say a lot, I mean it. In fact, Mac was on lean, PCP, and coke. By 2014, Mac's addiction was so bad that he was taking substances like it was food and water. What's more ominous about all of this was that the final track on his album Faces, titled Grand Finale, Mac hinted what would happen to him. Let us have a grand finale. The world will be just fine without me. The clown got a smile on his face. It's going down. We going out with a bang. Yikes. But later on, even Mac was aware of how bad his substance abuse problem was. In early 2015, after he released his supposed final track, Mac Miller contemplated quitting or at least minimizing his drug use. In fact, when he sat in an interview with Billboard around this time and was asked about his health, Mac said, "Yeah, definitely way healthier. I mean, compared to then. I still smoke cigarettes, I'm not completely sober, but I'm way better than I was at that point." However, addiction isn't something that can be easily quelled with words and promises, and Mac Miller was proof of this. A year after his interview, Mac released a personal documentary on YouTube called Stop Making Excuses. And here, he continued to say that he was in control of his life.
"And you can still have fun every now and then. I'm not sober."
However, it was clear how much substances had a firm hold on Mac.
"I get fucked up. Like, let's keep it real. I get super fucked up. Still. All the time. That will never stop. But I'm just in control of my life. I'm not fucked up right now. I'm chilling."
Quitting is not an easy task for addicts, and of course, Mac himself was not immune to this, especially at that point in his life. He'd been using drugs as a crutch for so long, whether to silence his demons or to cope with the stress and pressure of being a musician. Sadly, just 2 years after he said this in his documentary,
"Overdosing is just not cool. There's no legendary romance. You don't go down in history because you overdosed. Just die.
His worst fears were realized.
An up-and-coming rapper is dead at 26 years old. Mac Miller believed to have suffered an overdose at his Studio City, California home. The coroner took his body in for an autopsy.
On the morning of September 7th, 2018, the world of hip-hop and music in general received some of the worst news in recent years. At the young age of 26, Mac Miller suddenly was taken from this world. However, there was something sinister behind all of this. See, the night Mac died, he had ordered Oxy, Adderall, Hydrocodone, and from two separate dealers. Now, it's important to remember this list of substances that he ordered because it's going to be a bit crucial to the final parts of the story. You see, Mac's death was later ruled to be an overdose of coke, alcohol, and fentanyl. But if you remember, Mac didn't order fentanyl the night he OD'd. So where did the fentanyl come from? As it turned out, four of the five Oxy pills Mac had ordered were counterfeit and were laced with fentanyl. All of these pills would come from one of his dealers, Cameron Petit. Petit, along with two others, were arrested for distribution of fentanyl, and as of today, two of them have pleaded guilty and are serving quite long sentences, and one is heading to trial. The next rapper on this list is none other than Lil Baby. Like some of the rappers on this list, Lil Baby first got into lean through the influence of the older friends he hung out with. He remembered it as just part of his environment. The people around him were already sipping lean, so he gave it a try.
"How long have you been using lean for?"
"Like forever, like when it went cool. When it went like sipping or whatever they call it or whatever, like back then. Probably like 08, young, like the older dudes I was hanging with, they was on the lean, you know what I'm saying? So they were trying everything they trying."
But the most telling part of how Lil Baby's substance use habits started to worsen was in how he viewed it. When asked about what lean does for him, he said lean became a way to start flowing and keep himself in a better mood throughout the day.
"What does sipping do for you exactly?"
"Like, I be kind of flowing when I be high, you know what I'm saying? Like, it gets me high, you know what I'm saying? I just float, like, in a good mood, you know, I want to be bothered because I really don't like being bothered, period. You know what I'm saying? I got a real attitude problem, like, I don't like being bothered, like, I'm kind of alone, and, like, I be to myself, like, the drink, you know, it kind of keeps me going throughout the day."
I see.
According to Lil Baby, lean helped him feel less bothered by people, kept him calm, and made day-to-day life easier. To him, what he was doing wasn't even crazy, because other rappers do crazier things with it. He mentioned seeing other rappers like 21 Savage and Young Thug put lean on things like waffles and ice cream.
"Wow, type
What's the strangest thing you've done, if any?"
"Like, just drink it without a drink. You know what I'm saying? Straight out of city, bro. I ain't gonna put it on my food."
But he assured that he doesn't pour it on food just to flex. It's more of a personal experience, a daily routine for him, one with consequences, of course.
"Like that, you know, that just be like kicking shit, you know.
Flexing.
Really do that, you know. You gotta pop your shit, you know, for sure you can, whenever. I'll."
However, when he was asked if he was addicted, he was straightforward and gave an honest yes.
"Now, would you say you're addicted to it?"
"Yeah, definitely. Like, cause I quit every day. Like, I ain't fucking with this joint. Like, bro, like, I got some. Like, hell no, I'm straight, I don't want it. And later on, like, you got that."
But lean isn't just harmful physically. It's also expensive. Stupidly expensive. At the time, Lil Baby estimated that he spends thousands each week on lean. Sometimes $4,000 to $5,000 per week.
"Now, you are sipping. Are you a heavy sipper?"
"I'm a drinker. You know what I'm saying? I don't see, I drink, like, you know what I'm saying?
Heavy?
Heavy, like, about to spend, like, $4,000 to $5,000 a week on lean.
4 or 5 thousand on lean.
Yeah.
That's very expensive.
Man, one of the bros, like, that shit I did. Then it was like, I couldn't smoke weed, so it, like, I got to turn heavier to the lean. Like, shit, that would it be. Like, I don't be smoking no weed. I don't smoke weed, nothing like that.
In another interview, he recalled spending close to $20,000 a month during his early years with lean. But the most surprising part of all of this was that Lil Baby himself admitted that he tried to quit early on, and even spent time away from lean while in prison, where he went through withdrawal symptoms. In fact, it got so bad for Lil Baby that he experienced cold sweats, nightmares, and overall discomfort that comes from detoxing from substances.
Was that tough to deal with when you had to go to do the prison stint for 2 years and you couldn't have any?
Like, when I first got locked up, like, I used to have nightmares, cold sweats, everything. Like, shit, I was going through it.
He also added that he experienced nightmares for a month.
Every night, I have nightmares, wake up in cold sweat every night for about a month straight, something like that.
Do they help you with that when you're locked up? Yeah, do they give you medicine to cope with it?
Luckily for him, he had close friends in his circle who tried to help him, who suggested he cut back or quit lean, pointing out how it affected his health.
Has anybody ever tried to stop you? Like, have you ever had, like, an intervention? Like, hey, you need to stop.
Yeah, like,
this
everybody, like,
stuff.
You know, everybody be like, why you? Yeah, I'm like, hell, no, that ain't good. Like, girls who personally know me, like, you need to cut the lean. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I don't need to drink too much of that shit. But
Lil Baby even admitted that lean messes with the stomach and makes him irritable.
Have you had to deal with any health issues?
Nah, like, but sometimes when I'm drinking lean, like, my stomach be fucked up. Like, I don't be able to eat right or nothing, like, and I be super cranky or whatever, whatever. So I just try to keep it in my system.
In the end, he knew about the lethal consequences of the substance he was abusing, mentioning that he knew people who had passed away potentially from lean-related causes.
But I know it can kill you, like, too much of it. Like, some people, like, when they be at it, like, it's, like, more not just being an addict, but how much you can afford it. You know what I'm saying?
However, like many users, he justified that people can die from almost anything, choosing to downplay the danger it posed to him personally.
Knowing that people have died from it, or, you know.
Think about it. I think die from everything. Like, shit. Oh, everybody think, like, it ain't gonna be me.
So what happened to Lil Baby? Did he quit? Well, finally, when he was on probation, he was forced to, due to the simple realization that he could either quit or go back to prison. Now, let's shift our attention to an artist that's so associated with substance abuse that his drug of choice is literally in his name, Lil Xan. Lil Xan has had well-documented and publicized struggles with substance abuse, which is rooted in his own mental health issues and intense anxiety and depression. This, of course, led to Lil Xan using to ease his pain.
He'll jump out at the weirdest points in life. I can do a show for thousands of people and I won't have a drop of anxiety. But the minute I'm in, like, just a closed environment, it could just be the most random thing would just set me off.
At one point, Xan was consuming so many that he even admitted how excessive his drug habits became. He told Complex in an interview, "I was probably taking 12 to 14 milligrams a day. It was really bad. I was really bad. I was taking enough benzos to take down an elephant." And the scariest part was when he tried to quit, his body reacted in the worst way possible.
Yeah, I went cold turkey completely, and it sucks. You know, anybody that's gone through withdrawals knows that that's just horrible. I wouldn't wish that upon my worst enemy, you know? And then I had a few seizures.
However, Lil Xan's battle against his addiction was not a fair fight, since according to Lil Xan, his struggles with substance abuse were also encouraged by an outside party who was supposed to take care of him. According to him, Stat Quo, his former manager, enabled his addiction by providing him with drugs, knowing full well the dangers he faced. He claimed that Stat Quo even went so far as to ship drugs to him to ensure he would continue performing, especially during withdrawal periods. He knew all my plugs, so if I couldn't perform because I was withdrawing back then, because yes, I used to be a drug addict, he would make calls, send $5,000 out here, just to ship the drugs to wherever we were at in the world, because that was a time I almost died from the drugs. I was so skinny and unhealthy. Fortunately, it seems like Lil Xan has more or less succeeded in quelling his addiction, with his recent social media postings showing him in a healthier light, both physically and mentally. However, our next rapper is someone whose career and mental health status has had a continued downward trajectory since the early 2010s, and now seem to have gotten exponentially worse due to his recent drug addiction. And of course, we're talking about Kanye West. This all started in early 2024. During that time, Kanye West managed to get the attention of the world yet again when he posted an update about his life on Instagram. Specifically, when he shocked the world by showing off his $850,000 permanent titanium dentures. While this dental fixture seems normal for many rappers, what relates this incident to our story is that this one marked the beginning of Kanye's descent into substance abuse that could cost him his life. Let's take it back a year or so. In 2023, Kanye met a dentist named Dr. Thomas Connelly. During this meeting, Kanye would pitch his idea for a titanium grill, and both would get to work just a few months later. And the result of this work is, of course, Kanye's 850K titanium teeth. Many people made fun of how ridiculous Kanye looked, and some even compared him to the James Bond villain, Jaws. But while some people thought it was all fun and games, all of us would be oblivious to the fact that his relationship with Dr. Connelly would grow from here on. So much so that the doctor seemingly had complete control over Kanye's life. Now, this isn't the first time Kanye has undergone dental procedures. Early in his career, Ye had gotten his jaws wired shut due to a car accident, which birthed one of hip-hop's greatest tracks, Through the Wire. However, this time, the dental fixtures that Ye received would result in a negative and far worse outcome for him. Instead of creating a banger, Ye developed a substance addiction. Now, whether Ye's addiction originated from his titanium grill procedure or a little bit after that is unknown, but all we know is that the dentist would continue to supply Kanye with an endless amount of nitrous, aka whippets, which in turn would worsen Ye's substance abuse problems. But what wasn't apparent to most people involved in the situation, including Kanye, was that Dr. Connelly had actual sinister ulterior motives behind his just trying to alleviate Kanye's pain. In a series of tweets, these motives were revealed to the world. Kanye's former chief of staff, Milo Yiannopoulos, posted the following text message screenshots on X. This needs to be a long-term goal. Get recreational nitrous legalized. Meanwhile, we can master the delivery system with a 2-year head start, Dr. Connelly said at the start of his conversation. The thing is, while nitrous is legal in the US, recreational use is illegal in several states, including California, where Kanye resides. However, based on Connelly's text message, it seemed that the doctor had the motive of pushing the legalization of recreational use of nitrous so that they can mass produce it and, of course, profit from it. Milo would then respond, expressing his clear disgust at the entire ordeal. Surely you're joking. The prolonged misuse of nitrous causes birth defects, problems with B12, your spinal cord disintegrates. Why would anyone want to introduce another to an already depressed, addicted, demoralized, and apathetic population of dopamine slaves? A fair point for Milo here, but neither Kanye nor Dr. Tom would address Milo's outburst. However, like a true addict would, Ye ignored Milo's intervention and simply texted back, "Can I have nitrous today? Tom, you said you can bring them by today's check-in," which of course, Dr. Connelly would oblige to. "Are you at the chateau?" "Yes, can do." In the process, Kanye's nitrous addiction would continue to worsen. Not only was this supported by documents, which we'll get into in just a little bit, but Kanye himself would record himself saying this to another person who has had well-documented crashouts on social media.
"Ryan Garcia, this is Ye, I'm on the nitrous."
However, until then, we were still only aware of the tip of the iceberg. But in mid-2024, Milo left Yeezy, during which Dr. Connelly made moves to lead Yeezy's business operations. Milo then went on X to expose Connelly's shady efforts to get Ye hooked on the laughing gas so that he could extract millions of dollars from him, citing that this is the reason that Kanye's music and business ventures had been failing. There's a reason Ye, formerly known as Kanye West, is no longer capable of successfully releasing music or clothing. In fact, there are several reasons, but the most serious and the most recent is his dentist, Thomas Connelly. He continued by saying, "Connelly got Ye hooked on nitrous, laughing gas. It is my belief that Connelly sought to diminish Ye's mental faculties so that Connelly and his business associates could extract millions of dollars from him." Milo then filed a formal complaint against Dr. Connelly with the California Dental Board. These documents reveal a lot about how Connelly has been recklessly supplying Kanye with the ridiculous amounts of nitrous to keep him sedated while he takes over his business operations. The document revealed Connelly's ridiculous business plans, including the development of a personal use nitrous system for Kanye. Milo also thoroughly illustrated Connelly's unlawful nitrous provisions in the document. The case portrayed how Connelly was leeching $50,000 per month from Kanye to keep up the service. Essentially, his wealth kept growing while Kanye's mental health and health in general continued to deteriorate. As a dentist, Connelly was well aware of the dangers of using nitrous oxide outside of procedures. He was also aware of Kanye's history of mental illness and addiction. Despite this, he continued to supply the gas long after the emergence of distressing symptoms that led to widespread comment and concern. And evidently, Kanye looks horrible because of it. If you've been following news of Kanye for a while now, you'll know that his public antics have gone bad to worse to just outright embarrassing. From performing lewd acts in Venice with his wife to being openly anti-Semitic, it's unclear whether Kanye will ever bounce back. Even his recent albums, Vultures 1 and Vultures 2, were criticized for being uninspired and sounding lackluster. His lyricism and production quality are no longer seen as the top tier they once were. And of course, some fans believe his declining artistry may be the result of his ongoing nitrous addiction. Nitrous is insanely addictive and will kill your brain cells faster than you can snap a finger. If this is true, all the shit he's done makes a lot more sense. Not saying he's totally free of what he's done, but it would explain so much, one comment on Reddit said. Another concerned commenter perfectly described the situation for Kanye, stating, Damn, I'm sure many of us have seen the dark grip nitrous can have on people in the depths of their addiction. I can't imagine how intense that grip is when you have clean, medical grade, sometimes even flavorous canisters of nitrous delivered by a quote-unquote dentist. But speaking of the dangers that addicts can cause, our next rapper on this list is someone who unfortunately did not get the help he needed, and sadly, let substance abuse totally consume him for the worse, Lil Peep. Lil Peep is among the many rappers who started out releasing music during the good old days of the SoundCloud era before breaking through the mainstream. Known for leading emo rap, a subgenre of hip-hop that originated from the SoundCloud rap scene, Lil Peep's music heavily revolved around his experiences with depression, anxiety, and substance use. Peep's constant substance abuse stemmed from his efforts to cope with both his depression, as well as his mounting pressures of fame, which was clearly reflected in Peep's lyrics. 16 lines of blow and I'm fine, break my bones, but act as my sign. But before Lil Peep became famous in the rap scene, he was already dealing with intense anxiety and depression. Reportedly, as a young teen, he'd often vomit in the morning at the thought of going to school. Peep's mother was aware of her son's growing anxiety and had repeatedly tried to get him to see a psychologist. However, Peep opted to self-medicate using drugs, and this would be the start of Peep's eventual downfall. As Peep got more and more popular, his schedule became more and more hectic, and his anxiety wasn't helping him get through the series of shows that he had to do, as he practically was touring for the majority of 2016 and 2017. So, to cope, he'd often resort to drugs just so he could power through, and this of course was not a good idea in any way. It got so horrible that during his last show in LA in May 10th of 2017, his manager wanted to cancel the show when she saw that Peep was slumped, vomiting, nodding off, and stammering after taking an ox. However, Peep persuaded his manager to continue the event, saying, "No, I can do it." The show went on, and Peep would have a lot of moments like this throughout his career. This would become evident in some of Peep's shows, as he would often incoherently mumble the lyrics to his songs. In one instance, Peep was seen throwing up on stage in the middle of his performance. Eventually, substance abuse and mental health problems became a part of Lil Peep's image as a rapper, as problematic as that sounds, and both aspects would plague him throughout his short-lived career. And his fans embraced it, giving him substances for free at shows. So, with all that said, it seemed as though the bigger Peep's career got, the unhappier and more anxious he became. "I'm not enjoying my life," he once said to his manager. It also became apparent that Peep's friends weren't the only ones enabling his drug addiction, but even his management, who allegedly gave him a bag of substances at a dinner once. In one instance of this, throughout his 2016 to 2017 tour for Come Over When You're Sober, before Peep would go on his European leg, Sennett, his manager, texted Peep, "I'm about to land at JFK. I have 1 2-milligram and 4 quarter-milligrams. Are you close to the airport? I can pop by and say hi, or you can get in the morning. Let me know." Referring to pills. Regardless, Lil Peep continued being unhappy with being on tour, but he kept going at it anyways. Xanax, weed, coke, and alcohol pretty much kept him going throughout the entire thing, and Lil Peep's body could only handle so much before it would finally give in. Just a few months before Peep passed away, he sent a text that pretty much summed up the entire experience he felt during tour. "I'm under a lot of pressure from a lot of people, and I'm on a lot of drugs with no sleep." Another post uploaded by Peep came with a caption that read, "I don't let people help me, but I need help, but not when I have my pills, but that's temporary. One day, maybe I don't die young and I'll be happy. What is happy? I always have happiness for like 10 seconds and then it's gone. I'm getting so tired of this." Sadly, all of this would result in one of the most sad moments in hip-hop in years. On November 15th, 2017, Lil Peep was approached by 2 fans outside his tour bus. This interaction was pleasant enough for Peep at the time that he invited his fans inside the tour bus with him, where they continued to pop pills and smoke weed. About 45 minutes after getting inside the bus, Peep would take a nap. He never woke up again.
Lil Peep, an emerging singer, rapper, and YouTube star, has the age of 21, according to reports.
Peep's death was a shock to many, and a massive loss to the music industry. "He could have been this generation's Kurt Cobain," said Rolling Stone magazine. When Peep died, his biggest fans started to look more closely into his music, and they saw how Peep almost saw his death coming. Peep also called out for help a lot during his music. "Hold me, I can't breathe, I don't want to die, I don't want to OD, cup full of lean, pure codeine, 10 lines deep, now I can't see." Sadly, he never got the help that he needed. However, on the bright side, someone who Lil Peep did inspire was Trippie Redd. When Trippie Redd was addicted to substances, he described his life as horrible.
"I got sick as bro. I would get food, I'd be hungry as can't even eat it. It's weird as bro, sweating all the time. That's crazy, bro. I wouldn't wish that upon nobody, bro."
However, after Peep's passing, Trippie publicly stated his renewed perspective on the entire thing.
Don't do it. please don't do it, bro. That's liquid heroin.
Claiming a commitment to sobriety, stating that if it wasn't weed, he wasn't touching it anymore. In an Instagram Live, he addressed his own struggle with substance abuse.
Everybody need to use this time as a wake-up call. If it ain't weed, we ain't doing it no more. Period. If it ain't we ain't doing it no more.
And when he said we, he was pertaining to the emo rap community.
Us as a group, us as a whole, the whole emo music artists.
But unlike Trippie Redd, who managed to keep his substance use a bit more under the rug, our next rapper on this list failed to keep his struggles with substance abuse private and has made himself an embarrassment in 4K. This rapper is Famous Dex. In a now infamous Instagram Live session, Famous Dex fell asleep midstream, which raised concerns about his well-being. This video, of course, went viral. At first, he tried to blame it on sleep deprivation. The video that's right now going viral, that's kind of so stupid. For one, I'm a human being and I work my ass off, and once you put overtime overnight and then you come back home at 4 or something in the morning and you decide to go live, hey, don't let the world trick you and be fooled. So he was basically saying, hey, I was super tired, that's why I looked like I was nodding off. But he later admitted that he had a problem and he checked himself into rehab. TMZ reported that Dex was upset by the video of himself passing out and expressed the desire of never wanting to see himself like that again. However, after he got out, another video came out where it was clear he had relapsed. So in 2019, when Dex took to social media to announce that he was quitting substances, fans were happy. I just want to thank God, Dex said. I don't do Xans, lean, it's over with. You know what I'm saying? God is good. God is great. I just want to thank God for everything. I want to thank my supporters. I want to thank everybody supporting me. Everybody that knows me. God is so good. I'm relaxed. I'm chilling. I'm good. God is good, man. All right. You get the point. But it wasn't long before things took a turn for the worse yet again. In that same year, Dex suffered a seizure while performing on stage. He was carried backstage, but shockingly wasn't taken to a hospital. By 2020, Dex's struggles became even more visible to the public. He posted a video on Instagram where he looked intoxicated and later tweeted, "I don't want to smile no more." This raised alarm for his fans and his entourage, who were so concerned that one member reportedly slept in the same bed as him to monitor his well-being. Unfortunately, to this day, Dex is still not sober. Now, our next rapper is one who, like Famous Dex, has had big hits, but also had issues with substances, Soulja Boy. Whether you're a hip-hop fan or not, Soulja Boy's Crank That was a track you could not escape in the late 2000s. Throughout the years, Soulja Boy would jump in and out of the mainstream with a couple of catchy tracks, controversial ventures, and a fairly surprising amount of rumors, one of which would be a rumor wherein people accused them of being addicted to hard substances. Soulja Boy would actually address these rumors himself on Instagram Live.
Like, oh, Soulja Boy look like he on drugs. Soulja Boy look bad. Soulja Boy look like he on crack, he on powder.
Of course, he would deny the rumors.
Bitch, don't play with me like that. I ain't never did crack in my life, bitch. I'm a millionaire. I'm worth $30 million. I never did cocaine in my life. Don't play with me like that.
Soulja Boy would then say that the reason why he looked off at the time was because he recently got into a car accident. In a tweet, Soulja wrote, "Was involved in a very bad car accident last night due to a flash flood and mudslide." And while Soulja would deny being on hard substances, he has admitted to leading grass.
I never did coke a day in my life, bro. All I do is smoke weed and sip lean.
Soulja also frequently referenced Xans in some of his songs. I'm in my Xan with that lean, money gang. Soulja, Xan with that lean, Xan with that lean, Xan with that. But the thing is, compared to most young rappers in the 2010s, you don't really think of drugs when someone mentions Soulja Boy. Rather, Soulja Boy more so embodied the typical rapper who flexes money. But still, like many rappers, Soulja Boy did experience his fair share of controversies and had troubles with the law due to banned substances. Back in 2011, he got stopped by the police in Georgia and they found 5 ounces of weed in his vehicle, and he had to pay a $10,000 bond for his encounter. As mentioned, lean is another choice of poison for Soulja Boy. However, his relationship with lean is perhaps more tied in with his masculinity, as he claims to drink it for inspiration.
Every time I drink, I gotta work. It just calms you down. It does make you more creative.
So, like many rappers in this era, Soulja Boy used to rely on substances to be more creative. However, it seems like all of this is behind Soulja Boy, as in 2019, he claims to have kicked his habits altogether. After being arrested in April 2019, he ended up gaining 50 pounds while in jail. Upon his release, Soulja's manager said he's focusing on getting his life together and staying clean. But compared to Soulja Boy, our next rapper might not be that well known in the scene. Still, what is apparent is that this artist has one of the worst drug addictions in hip-hop. And we're talking about Rilo Rodriguez, an Alabama-based rapper who's a part of Lil Baby's now defunct record label, Four Pockets Full. Unlike many of the big names on this list, Rilo Rodriguez rarely does interviews, yet his struggles with addiction are well documented in his music. For instance, check out his songs like Addiction and Code Insane, where the title itself alludes to his addiction. But we're not just making assumptions based on some lyrics in Rilo's songs, because Rilo himself has been extremely candid about his overconsumption of lean, to the point that he would even answer these types of questions in interviews.
How much do you spend on lean, and what's the most you spent at once?
On lean week.
Yeah.
Day, alright, oh god, yeah. Two. Probably like 4,000.
4,000 a week?
Probably like 4,000, 30.
Damn. And that was at once or that's weekly?
Hopefully his ex-label boss, Lil Baby, can help him. Now, for the most part, we've been mostly discussing rappers in the modern generation, but obviously, substance abuse has been prevalent in hip-hop since the 90s. And when we talk about 90s rappers associated with drugs and alcohol, there are a few that stand out for how excessive their drug spending are, as much as the legendary Flavor Flav. Throughout the years, Flav's influence would reach outside of music and onto television, dining, and sports. Thanks to his multiple ventures, he'd amass a fortune, which unfortunately, Flav would use and lose from funding his terrible drug addiction. Unlike some rappers on this video, with vast discographies to tell stories about their substance abuse, and considering Flavor Flav didn't really rap much, he didn't really have much chance to tell much of his stories through music, let alone a drug addiction. This is why not too many people know just how big of a drug addict Flavor Flav was, unless you were really into hip-hop at the time.
I kind of maintained myself very well, you know what I'm saying, while I was on that shit, you feel me? And not only that, but I kind of kept it hidden too, you know what I'm saying?
However, unbeknownst to many in the hip-hop scene, the reality was that Flavor Flav was a heavy crack addict. The question is, just how bad was Flavor Flav's drug addiction at the time? Well, let's have him break it down for us.
And there was a time that I was spending $2,400 to $2,600 a day for 6 years straight. You do the math. And that's how much I spent on drugs.
$2,400 to $2,600 a day on substances is insane, especially when you factor in inflation. When you think about it, that means that Flavor Flav spent about $876,000 to $949,000 on substances every year for 6 years straight. That's millions of dollars. Now, unlike some of the previous rappers mentioned in the video, Flavor Flav unfortunately managed to get off drugs early enough before it became too big of a problem for him. And he acknowledged that this period of his life wasn't easy.
Let me tell you something, man. Drugs, them shits is real easy to get on.
Luckily, as of 2024, at the time of writing this video, Flavor Flav is already 16 years clean. But we couldn't make a video like this without speaking on one of the most outspoken addicts, Lil Pump. Lil Pump became the face of the SoundCloud rap era's drug-fueled lifestyle, with hits like Gucci Gang celebrating party culture, complete with references to Xanax and other substances. Lil Pump's dabble with substances is well documented, not just in his songs, but also in his own branding. In 2017, he infamously tweeted, "Xanax is the wave," clearly showing how he and his peers were significant in promoting the use of drugs. But after Lil Peep's death, it seems like Pump had a change of heart. Much like Trippy, Lil Pump began to shift towards a different approach in his lifestyle, posting on Instagram his intentions to clean up his act, stating, "2018, we are going more crazy, love y'all. By the way, I don't take Xans no more, fuck Xans 2018. However, as we've seen in some of the entries in this list, letting go of some harmful yet addictive habits is truly a difficult task, especially when substance use has become part of your branding and a big chunk of how you earn your income. In Lil Pump's case, while he might have sworn to shift his narrative, he still played into his party persona, joking about drug use in tracks like Drug Addicts. In the song, he rapped about how much he did substances. To make things worse, the music video featured Lil Pump in a rehab center with a bunch of hot nurses, which many found a bit distasteful, especially knowing that he claimed to clean up his act. And again, by 2019, Lil Pump seemed to have another change of perspective, as he yet again tried to take the sober lifestyle seriously, taking to Instagram to say, "You guys, I'm making an announcement, I don't sip no more lean at all. I don't do no more drugs, fuck all that." As I said before, substance abuse isn't inclusive to today's generation. And one of the most notable rappers from a previous generation who struggled with substance abuse was DMX. DMX was one of the largest rappers in the 90s and 2000s, with widely recognized tracks such as "X Gon' Give It To Ya" and "Party Up." His aggressive style and explosive lyrics was highly influential to the genre, earning him the title as one of the best MCs during his peak. However, unfortunately, DMX's life is one that's riddled with hardships and battles, both around him and in him, and these experiences would shape his music and his personality moving forward. Among the things that DMX battled throughout his life was a severe crack addiction. And the worst part about all of this was X got introduced to the drug without his consent or knowledge. That detail alone should tell you just how bad DMX's struggle with substance abuse truly was. You see, DMX's early years were ripe with extreme hardships. He was practically homeless at around age 10, sleeping in storage bins, and only had stray dogs as friends. And so, he robbed and carjacked so that he could provide food and clothing for himself and his dogs. On DMX's 14th birthday, he spent his birthday celebrating with a rapper named Reddy Ron, someone who would eventually go on to become DMX's mentor. According to DMX, to make the celebration interesting, Reddy Ron offered him a substance.
So he came back with a blunt rolled up, and as I'm counting the money, he likes to, and I said, I was impressed. Well, I don't really smoke it. And he passed the ball around, and wow.
DMX would become emotional whenever he talked about this moment in his life, because little did DMX know at the time, this in question was more than just a hit of marijuana. Rather, that one blunt and that specific birthday would mark the start of DMX's biggest life struggle.
I later found out that he laced the blunt with crack. My thing. Why would you do that to a child?
DMX would credit this moment as the beginning of his downfall. As DMX stated, that day not only was his 14th birthday, but the birth of something dark within DMX.
A monster was born. A monster was born. I wouldn't do that to my worst enemy. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
However, Reddy Ron would outright dispute DMX's claims, denying ever drugging his former protege.
You gotta remember, just because somebody is world famous doesn't mean they're always honest. And I've got nothing bad to say about him, but you gotta stop lying on me.
The questionable part about this was Reddy Ron would wait until DMX's passing before he ever made a statement, meaning DMX could not defend himself. But getting back to the topic of DMX's struggles with substance abuse, seeming as he started his career in the 90s, DMX never really alluded to his drug use much in his music, as it wasn't as acceptable as it was today. Instead, DMX would hide his struggles within wordplay, using metaphors such as the devil, or chip on the shoulder, or the pit, whenever he talked about his substance problems. He did rap about it a little though. Used to get high just to get by, used to have a puff in my L in the morning before I could fly. However, many did not realize how bad it truly was. For the entire time that DMX had been struggling with substance abuse, his physical health had been severely affected several times, to the point of being hospitalized. One instance of this was in 2016. That year, reports circulated of how DMX was rushed to the hospital after he was found unresponsive in the parking lot of the Ramada Inn in New York. An eyewitness from the incident said he saw DMX take a powdered substance before he passed out. He became conscious again after he was shot with Narcan, an opiate reversal drug. When he came to his senses, DMX claimed he only suffered an asthma attack. But the thing is, the DMX did try to combat his cocaine addiction several times throughout his life by going to rehab. He even stated how he hated that the younger generation thought substances were cool. He first went to rehab in 2002, then in 2017, and lastly in 2019. Unfortunately, DMX would relapse every single time, showing just how difficult addiction is to deal with. Sadly, the worst of these incidents came just relatively recently. In 2021, all of DMX's struggles and experiences with substance abuse had caught up to him in the worst way possible. That year, DMX was sent to the hospital once again, this time from a suspected drug-induced heart attack. The day after he arrived at the hospital, DMX's attorney publicly announced that he was on life support and that he was in a vegetative state. On April 9th of 2021, a week after arriving at the hospital, the hip-hop world would once again mourn in unison as one of its greatest had left the world. DMX would succumb to his addiction and was pronounced dead at the age of 50. However, DMX's passing was not an isolated case by any means. There have been plenty of hip-hop artists that experienced the same fate, one of them being Rich Homie Quan. Rich Homie Quan was an Atlanta-based rapper who achieved mainstream success in the 2010s. With hit singles like Type of Way and Flex, Quan was revered by fans and critics for his melodic delivery and catchy anthems. With his rising fame, however, also came the mounting pressure of the music industry and the growing temptations surrounding it, mainly substance abuse. But of course, it didn't happen all at once. When Quan first started experiencing success in music, he was taken aback at how hectic his schedule would be.
There's no manual handbook. Nobody went to school to do this. Like, we some street niggas that just tried something and it worked. We didn't know. You know what I'm saying? Don't nobody know what's gonna transpire. We don't know this stuff gonna happen.
Quan felt the pressure of chasing numbers and going on tours. Eventually, his body couldn't keep up with the pressure.
Cliff, when I first got the role, the $800 show, I ain't drink no liquor, no lean, no none of that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Before some type of way, we was doing so many shows, I couldn't stay up.
According to Quan, in order to physically and mentally keep up with the busy schedule and the pressure of holding the entire tour together, he turned to substances.
Mm-hmm. So I knew some people like, if I got something to keep you up, and kept me up, and... You know,
it was a machine after that.
The worst part about all of this is when he learned who introduced him to drugs.
Family member.
Oh, family member.
It's family.
And of course, due to the addictive chemicals behind these substances, rich homie Quan later admitted that things got so bad for him that he had to take Molly every day just to be able to perform. Something that no performer should ever have to put themselves through.
Oh, hell yeah, man, I was on Molly every day.
Oof.
Listen, geeked up. Fight down. Listen, I'm talking, bro, I felt like I couldn't do a show or a song without being on my...
But that's not all. In 2017, things took a turn for the worse for Quan when he got arrested for drug possession. And from there, Rich Homie Quan's career in hip-hop started to slowly but surely spiral downwards. His conviction, as well as a rumored blackballing due to allegedly stitching on Young Thug, restricted him from releasing music and doing shows. Essentially, the very thing that brought him joy at this time brought him severely down.
I can't drop no music, my show money down, and I got a dark cloud over my head, bro. I probably was the lowest I was in my life.
Thankfully for him then, his case would be dropped 2 years later. And Quan seemed to be in good spirits. Unfortunately for Quan, despite coming out of the ordeal with a positive outlook, his music career went on a different trajectory. A year after his conviction, Quan went all out, releasing his debut studio album, Rich As In Spirit. That said, Quan's succeeding releases wouldn't be as popular as his early ones. And sadly, his debut album flopped, only selling 13K first week. His best-selling track was Flex in 2015, and he never released a track that became even close to as successful as that. And unfortunately, in this modern hip-hop generation, despite how big you become, no one is ever untouchable, and it only takes a few bad moments for people to turn on you and look at your career as nothing but a dud. And that's exactly what happened to Rich Homie Quan. Everyone takes it differently, and the lack of success that Quan received from his falling releases hit him pretty hard. Sadly, during this time, whenever Quan fell down, he turned to substances to bring him back up.
But then that's when I started feeling like my music was like falling out. I was caught up, like I was lost in the South.
Right.
Because when I'm doing the money right now, I'm up.
He tried to make a comeback, but he slowly faded into irrelevance. That is, until September of 2024, when news regarding Rich Homie Quan took the hip-hop world by storm in a very, very tragic way.
The hip-hop community mourning one of their own. Rich Homie Quan has died at his home in Atlanta. The rapper's family confirmed his death to Rolling Stone. Rich was 34 years old.
In yet another devastating moment in hip-hop, at the young age of 34, Rich Homie Quan was reported to have passed away. Later, toxicology reports would then reveal that Rich Homie Quan died of an accidental overdose. The coroners found multiple drugs in his system, including cocaine and fentanyl. Alright guys, so if you made it this far, I want to thank you, and to reward you guys, I got a bonus for you. I wanted to provide for you a history on the evolution of drugs in hip-hop from the 90s, 2000s, to 2010s, to now. And by the way, sorry for all the censoring, I'd just rather be safe than sorry. So without further ado, thank you for making it this far, appreciate it, and see you at the end. Interestingly enough, there are also other factors as to why drugs and alcohol have plagued the hip-hop community. The obvious fact is this shouldn't only be attributed to how rappers and personalities in hip-hop have glorified substance abuse. Rather, another factor to consider is that the substances that plague the hip-hop community have also changed and evolved over time. Hip-hop is a genre that has constantly evolved, changing and progressing in line with moments that happen within the community as well as musical innovations. Of course, this same notion applies when it comes to the substances the community raps about per generation. For example, substances like crack, weed and coke were prevalent in the 90s and 2000s as both the substance of choice as well as the ones that could be rapped about. While today's generation of rappers talk about lean, molly, perks, and henny. But let's discuss substance abuse's evolution in hip-hop further. In 2016, Genius, the popular lyrics website, released a feature that covered 30 years of hip-hop history and how prevalent drugs were within the genre. In this article, Genius revealed that the most preferred substance for the hip-hop community is none other than funny grass, with artists such as Cypress Hill and Dr. Dre championing the substance to popularity, with Cypress Hill's self-titled album and Dr. Dre's The Chronic, both of which heavily reference the substance. Prior to this, most rappers either rapped about crack, or didn't mention any drugs at all. But of course, things were only starting to pick up with the arrival of hip-hop legends like Tupac, Snoop Dogg, and in the late 90s, a trend was born out of necessity as corruption started to take over the streets and communities in the US. This changed everything about hip-hop. Now, if there's any type of substance that's more associated to hip-hop and to music in general, it's grass. For decades, it has been deeply intertwined with hip-hop, often celebrated rather than criticized, and those that do criticize it are oftentimes those with hidden agendas. But why is this specific earned such acceptance within the genre? Well, a lot of rappers use either alcohol or grass or both during freestyles. Not a lot of rappers are great freestylers because of their fear or self-consciousness that the next bars won't rhyme or mess up the flow. And that's where weed comes in handy. Weed relaxes that internal critic and helps them ease into a flow. It's almost like flipping a switch from self-judgment to self-expression. In fact, some rappers say it's the only way they can truly freestyle without overthinking every line. But it's not just about letting go of anxiety. Some artists also describe their weed as a way to tap into something deeper, something almost metaphysical. For rappers, this often means feeling more connected to their creative flow. That heightened state of mind allows them to access new ideas beyond what they can usually create while sober. So in a way, it's not just about getting high, it's more so about expanding artistic boundaries. Then there's the cultural side of things. Grass has gradually become a less taboo topic, both in hip-hop and across America. And as legalization spreads, the stigma surrounding weed is fading, and hip-hop, already a grass-friendly industry, is embracing it more openly. Today, it's not rare to see your favorite rappers sharing their dream smoke session scenarios or adding weed to their public personas. Snoop Dogg, Wiz Khalifa, and Cypress Hill have all built their entire brands around marijuana culture. Interestingly, the vibe of grass-centric rap reflects the drug effects. It's all about being laid back and chilled out, which we hear in the slow beats and relaxed flows of artists like Wiz Khalifa or Snoop. And the obvious point of this segment, too, is that grass's status in hip-hop often contrasts with harder drugs like cocaine or crack, which have much darker relationships in the genre. While weed enhances moods and encourages laid-back vibes, other, more potent substances bring a sense of urgency to its users, which is often discussed as a way of survival rather than fun. However, in complete opposition to how grass affects its users, our next substance to discuss is one with much more destructive effects. Among the worst yet most popular substances in the 90s that invaded the hip-hop world is cocaine, also known as coke or blow. Cocaine is a highly addictive stimulant drug that has been ever present in hip-hop since the 90s. In fact, next to weed, cocaine is the second most popular substance in hip-hop due to how it can increase its users' energy and alertness and can cause bouts of euphoria. Now, in the world of hip-hop, many of the biggest names in the game, such as Jay-Z, Pusha T, and Eminem, have all made references to cocaine. Unfortunately, the drug has also caused the death of many rappers, namely ODB, Mac Daddy, and DMX. And alarmingly enough, according to autopsy reports, cocaine was also found in Mac Miller's system at the time of his death. So with all these victims we've mentioned, not even mentioning some of the lesser known incidents in hip hop involving cocaine, it's safe to say that the substance is definitely one of the more dangerous drugs that has plagued the world of hip hop. On the other hand, another substance that has negatively consumed rappers and the black communities in general since the early 80s, crack, a highly concentrated form of cocaine. Much like powdered cocaine, the user can feel very irritated and paranoid once the high dies down. Crack has made such a mark on hip-hop in certain communities to the point that during the 80s, that period in history would end up being canonically dubbed as the crack era. In fact, one of the first popular hip-hop tracks that referenced the substance was a warning against the crack epidemic, a track by Grandmaster Melly Mel called White Lines, Don't Do It. Rappers such as Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, Biggie, and Nas also dropped tracks that warned against crack. It was also around this time that rappers started rapping more about weed to try and dissuade their fans from using crack and opt for a better alternative. But in opposition to these rappers' advocacies against crack, some rappers such as Jay-Z, Tupac, Dr. Dre, and more have rapped about selling it. Not only that, they also rapped about how their parents and other family members sold and used crack before them. And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen. The interesting thing, and more important thing to note though, is that the rappers at the time used their music to speak up about the dangers and torments that came with the drug. Rarely did you ever hear a rapper in the 80s or 90s glorify crack the same way modern rappers glorify lean or pills. In fact, if there's anyone who could glorify crack, it's the rappers from the 2010s. Although crack never left hip-hop culture and the black community completely, it's remained fairly unmentioned in the past decades. That is, until a particularly catchy track caught the ears of the world, specifically when Fetty Wap placed crack at the forefront of his hit debut single, Trap Queen, a track that talks about cooking crack with a woman. Now in the 90s, rappers like Lord Jamar, DMX, and Flavor Flav, to name a few, became some of hip-hop's most controversial rappers due to many factors, including their substance abuse. However, this trend of drugs and alcohol being prevalent and ingrained in hip-hop was just starting to ramp up. And while coke remained a popular choice within rap in the 90s, a liquid brew was about to make a splash in the scene. also known as Scissorp or Purple Drank, is one of the most popular substances in hip-hop, initially emerging in the early 2000s due to rappers such as DJ Screw, UGK, and 36 Mafia. The dangerous drink has since re-emerged in hip-hop, appearing on lyrics and music videos from artists such as Lil Pump, Trippie Redd, and Young Lean, just to name a few. There are many reasons behind lean's popularity among substance abusers. One is that it's easy to make, basically lean by bleep, which apparently tastes really good. However, the problem is that the prescription cough syrup used in lean contains opiates and caffeine. Normally, these are substances used as painkillers, but when the body isn't experiencing any pain, consuming lean causes users to feel more relaxed and euphoric, and at times, lethargic. The rising number of younger people trying out lean isn't surprising, as aside from lean is one of the most referenced substances used by some of the largest rappers, which might not be the reason many young fans are going out of their way to try and lean for themselves. Think back to like Juice WRLD. Unfortunately, many of them are completely unaware of how dangerous lean. The skies behind the unassuming name Purple Drank, what many do not know, especially teens, is that lean contains opiates, making the substance highly dangerous when overconsumed.
I had kids who were testing positive for opiates on the drug screens, and they were like, no, I've never done that before. And I'm like, are you sure?
Yeah.
They had no idea that they had an opiate in their body.
Eventually, due to the highly addictive chemicals in opiates, these young people are bound to develop an addiction to lean, which leads to more unwarranted consequences in the long term.
If you're high all the time, you can't pass class. You're falling asleep in class. I had kids falling asleep in counseling sessions. Like, out. They're out. I'm talking to them and they're out. And lean is not cheap. It's very expensive. So then they're stealing to get the lean.
But the appeal of lean is also what makes it terrifying. Like cough syrup, lean causes motor skill impairment and drowsiness, which is why it is so common for us to see artists using lean to appear drowsy and out of it in interviews and Instagram lives, which was the case for this alarming appearance from Juice WRLD.
Sounds like a lot of heart gone into it. I want you to describe that single and that track that we're playing right now.
And like every other banned substance, considering that lean contains opiates, and I've said this like a million times, the drink is highly addictive.
Motherfuckers just try to sip it to be cool, but after you try to sip it to be cool, you start getting hooked. And once you hooked, that's when you start really spending your bread on it, and that's when it start consuming you.
What's worse is that users that have developed severe lean addiction and try to quit it go through terrible withdrawal symptoms.
You know, drying out from drinking lean, I don't know, I guess probably the worst feeling in the world, you know, it tell your body down.
But its drowsiness and lethargy aren't the only side effects from lean. The scary part is that when a user becomes extremely addicted to lean, they can potentially receive damage to their vital organs, such as their heart, respiratory muscles, brain, and other organs. But this isn't all just exaggeration. In fact, lean has been responsible for destroying the lives of some of the most influential participants in the hip-hop community. One of the earliest losses in hip-hop due to substance abuse was DJ Screw. Known as the mastermind behind Houston's Chopped and Screwed sound, DJ Screw's influence is forever tied to lean culture, to the point that the substance became a staple in Southern rap, largely due to its impact. But if you're uninformed with who DJ Screw is and what he represented in hip-hop, let me enlighten you for a bit. See, DJ Screw was the pioneer of the Chopped and Screwed mixing technique, which involves slowing down the tempo of a track to create a more mellow feel, just like the feeling of being on lean. Many in the hip-hop community credit DJ Screw to be the originator of the slower hip-hop sound so many rappers today employ. Sadly, in November of 2000, DJ Screw was found dead in an overdose involving codeine, Valium, and PCP. He was just 29, and of course, it wouldn't be the last time Lee claimed a hip-hop legend. Lee continued to spread in the South, and another one of its victims was Pimp C. In December of 2007, Pimp C was found dead in his hotel room, with his death attributed to a lethal combination of lean and sleep apnea. And they're not alone. Other rappers such as Lil Wayne and Gucci Mane have also admitted to lean addictions in the past. Trippie Redd, a rapper known for substance references, has since advocated against lean, calling it liquid hair.
Don't do lean. Please don't do lean, bro. That shit is liquid hair. Don't do it.
However, lean wasn't the only star of the show in the 2000s. While some rappers were getting their fix from a deceptively sweet concoction, a different type of substance was starting to dominate and unknowingly destroy the lives of others. A pill that people usually take to handle their daily mental struggles suddenly began to be consumed for a different type of reason. Xanax, a prescription drug for anxiety, is among the most emblematic and problematic topics existing in the new wave of hip-hop. Not just a harmful substance, but also due to what it represents in the culture. Once confined to quiet medical conversations, this little pill, nicknamed Azan, became the anthem of SoundCloud rap, to the point that one of the most notable artists to come out of the era took the anxiety's meds name as his own. But how did something meant to calm the mind become a deadly part of hip-hop culture? Let's go back a few years. To understand how a little pill became such a big problem in hip-hop, we have to set the stage by a decade. By the mid-2010s, a wave of young artists emerged from platforms like SoundCloud, blending hip-hop with emo and raw vulnerability. Artists like Lil Peep and Lil Xan took Xan and wore it as a badge of honor, and their music was filled with references to popping Xans, basically using the drug to numb their pain. So what is Xanax, and why, despite its known effects, is it still among the drug choice for many in the hip-hop scene? Well, let's discuss this particular drug in depth for a bit. Xanax, or alprazolam, is a type of benzodiazepine, a class of drugs known for calming the central nervous system. In small, prescribed doses, it can help manage anxiety and panic disorders, but in the hip-hop world, this prescription drug was transformed into a recreational tool for escaping emotional pain. When you think about it, rappers have long used drugs to deal with stress, anxiety, and depression. This is nothing new in the music industry. Going through history, the 90s had the 2000s had weed, lean, and malt, and of course, last generations, there were of course many, but at the consistent top of this list was Xanax. However, in the late 2000s, the hype surrounding lean and Xanax, among other drugs and alcoholic beverages, started to get muffled slightly, allowing for another diverse set of substances to emerge. But this time, the glorification was amplified by tenfold. As the choices for harmful substances grew, so did the number of big-name rappers taking them. And of course, with the fame comes the spotlight. And while it's safe to say that the 2010s shed a horrifying light on just how embedded substance abuse really was in hip-hop. Now, as hip-hop's strict fixation on Xanax started to shift away, a new pill lodged itself into the conversation. Percocets, aka Percs, have gained a troubling reputation within the genre. With some of today's biggest rappers like Quavo, Future, and more being associated with the substance, it's undeniable how embedded it is in the genre. So, what exactly are Percocets? A Percocet is a prescription painkiller made up of oxycodone and acetaminophen, the same active ingredient found in Tylenol. This drug is typically prescribed as a pain-relieving medication. However, Percocets also carry a high risk of addiction and abuse, and that's where hip-hop enters into the picture. The cultural glorification of Percocets in hip-hop can't be ignored, with artists like Future popularizing the drug in songs like Mask Off. I mean, the chorus of the song literally promotes its use and glorification, reflecting the normalized idea of mixing these substances to achieve a higher state of euphoria or numbness. Unfortunately, behind its blatant glorification, what these rappers don't rap about is the fact that abusing can cause a range of health issues, from liver damage to kidney failure. It's not even about getting high and blacking out. The long-term damage is significant, even life-threatening. And to add to that, Percocets are incredibly addictive. A combination of oxycodone and acetaminophen makes them powerful. And if someone has a history of substance abuse or mental illness, the risk of addiction only escalates. So, this isn't something artists and fans can just shrug off. We've reached a point where Percocets, Xanax, and other drugs designed to treat serious addictions like anxiety or depression have become symbols of rebellion or coping mechanisms in the hip-hop world, especially within the emo rap subgenre. And while this may seem like a reflection of real struggles, it's dangerous because of how casually these drugs are treated. Another drug that's causing problems in the hip-hop scene is fentanyl. You've probably heard of fent, but probably in the most tragic circumstances. Fent, a synthetic opioid, has found its way into almost every corner of the drug world, especially in the music industry. What makes fentanyl so deadly though? Well, fentanyl created back in the 1960s to be a faster-acting, more potent alternative to painkillers like morphine and methadone. It's about 100 times stronger than morphine, and if that sounds insane, that's because it is. Originally, fentanyl was seen as a medical breakthrough, but what started as a helpful medication quickly turned into a weapon. By the time the 90s rolled around, fentanyl became easier to administer. It could be used through patches, lozenges, and other methods that are way less invasive than injections. However, it also made it easier to abuse. When consumed beyond the prescribed dosage, fentanyl can cause a euphoric high, but it can also shut down your body's ability to breathe. And the hip-hop world would soon feel its impact with the passing of Lil Peep and Mac Miller, two artists whose careers were cut short by accidental overdoses involving fentanyl. So, fentanyl's impact isn't just about its physical effects. It's taken away some of the most influential voices of our time. And as rapper Black Thought said in his Hot 97 freestyle, as babies, we went from Similac to Enfamil to the internet and fentanyl. When all consent was still against the will, I got that detox for y'all. The thing is, many people still don't know how dangerous these drugs are. You could be taking a pill you think is Xanax or alcohol, but it's laced with fentanyl, and that's it. You're done. Just 2 milligrams of this stuff is enough to kill you. And that's not the least bit of an exaggeration. As a matter of fact, in 2021 alone, over 700,000 people in the US overdosed on fentanyl, accounting for almost 70% of drug-related fatalities in the country. So, fentanyl's relationship with hip-hop is a painful one. But is the hip-hop scene finally moving away from glorifying substance abuse? As a matter of fact, the answer is obviously not. Unfortunately, more harmful substances would make their way into the scene, such as MDMA. MDMA, aka ecstasy or molly, is among the most prevalent substances to plague the hip-hop world in ways that go beyond a passing mention in lyrics. From Rihanna's casual mention of the drug Diamonds, I know, it's not a rap song, to Danny Brown's constant alliterations to either X or molly in his albums, chances are, if you listen to hip-hop, you've probably encountered metaphors of MDMA in songs. But how did MDMA Once a pharmaceutical experiment from the early 20th century, Germany ended up dominating club scenes and hip-hop verses. Well, the thing is, initially, MDMA wasn't made for recreational use. It's a synthetic compound originally developed back in 1912 for synthesizing blood clotting medication. However, fast forward to the 80s, and MDMA entered the streets and became a huge drug in the party scene. Suddenly, people discovered how the drug gives users a sense of euphoria and non-stop energy that can last up to 6 hours. Now, a few decades later, when the early 2010s EDM wave hit the mainstream pop culture, so did a pure form of MDMA, and hip-hop was right there, embracing the psychedelic phase as its own. And of course, hip-hop being an art form of lyricism and wordplay, we heard bars all over the charts, such as in Trinidad James' famous line, "Pop to I'm sweating, woo, pop to I'm sweating, woo," in his song All Gold Everything, turning the substance into a pop culture meme. Eventually, like many substances that entered hip-hop culture, Molly was no longer just a drug, but an accessory to the hip-hop lifestyle. However, this era wasn't just about Molly, as it was a bigger shift in hip-hop culture. For a long time, rap glorified the selling of drugs, the hustle, but suddenly artists were openly celebrating the effects of these substances instead. Slowly but surely, Molly became a movement in and of itself, to the point that the DJ and producer 8-Track, who's been in the industry since the early 2000s, even called it out as hip-hop's psychedelic phase. But despite this, 8-Track was among those in hip-hop who saw through the euphoric effects of the He mentioned how, for a while, the culture seemed to be swept up in the glamorizing effects without fully understanding what they were advocating for. So what are those risks? Well, MDMA affects the brain by flooding it with serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine, which boosts feelings of happiness and empathy. But there can be bad effects as well, such as jaw clenching, teeth grinding, high blood pressure, and when combined with other drugs or alcohol, the chance of overdosing increases by tenfold. In severe cases, users have experienced seizures, kidney damage, and even heart failure. Even regular use can cause long-term issues like depression, memory loss, and confusion due to its effect on brain chemistry. And that's a reality that is rarely mentioned in the music. But this wasn't the only issue, as some people seem to view MDMA as more than a way to get high. And this is when things got really dark. One artist in particular, Rick Ross, faced heavy backlash when lyrics from his song, UOENO, turned Molly from a party drug into a disturbing reference point indicating deeper, darker themes. I mean, just read the lyrics and see how messed up it was. Put Molly in her champagne, she ain't even know it. I took her home and I enjoyed that, she ain't even know it. Now, the obvious problem with all of this is that when some of the biggest names in hip-hop, such as Rick Ross and Danny Brown, carelessly promote the use of MDMA and make the drug sound as fun as it can be, its downside is that the listeners might be prone to trying out the drug as well. Take, for example, a study that conducted research on young black teens and Molly. The question was, is it fair to say that hip-hop influenced young teens to try Molly? Well, according to studies, yes. Specifically, the University of Florida conducted research in which they spoke directly with young black adults who have tried Molly, and the responses they garnered from the study provided a substantial truth. According to their findings, 82% of young black adults who tried Molly said their decision to try the drug in the first place was motivated by hip-hop. This is especially alarming considering how harmful Molly can be. When overconsumed, the drug can have severe side effects. Molly, although not as dangerous as opiates, has been linked to psychiatric problems, sexual risk-taking, and adverse health outcomes like seizures, irregular heartbeat, hypothermia, and even death, said the lead author of the study, Kari Rigg. But despite the implied dangers behind the drug, why don't these young fans fear the side effects of Molly? The answer is simple. That's because when rappers talk about these substances, they mainly talk about how fun and cool it can be, rarely discussing its harmful effects. And the alarming part is that many of these young teens are ignorant to its effects. Going back to the University of Florida study, one of the participants said, "I'm just trying to party like a rock star, not get strung out." Whenever they, rappers, mentioned it, Molly, they're either partying, drinking alcohol, smoking weed, or having sex. All of the things I love to do most. I never heard about anyone getting addicted or dying. That made me feel better about trying it. If that response doesn't alert you to how bad it really is, then I don't know what will. But obviously, the answer isn't as black and white as some people assume it to be. As we've already established, substance use in hip-hop evolves with the times. And with today's social climate fixated on mental health, the things that rappers have been consuming have also adapted this trend. More recently, downer medications such as Xans or Perks have become the popular choice among modern rappers. Of course, lean has also seen a resurgence in popularity, especially in younger rappers like Lil Xan, Trippie Redd, and Juice WRLD. But aside from pills, alcohol, and other forms of common substances, rappers are known to abuse one drug that has surprisingly become trending recently, despite being notably absent in hip-hop songs. It's nitrous, a party drug originally used in the medical field to induce anesthetics. You may know it by its more common name though, laughing gas or whippets. So what is this drug? Well, nitrous or nitrous oxide is a chemical used in medicine as a sedative or anesthetic during medical and dental procedures. Outside of medicine, nitrous is used to support combustion in motor engines and racing vehicles. Recently, due to Kanye West, whose nitrous addiction has been openly documented and discussed, the substance has gained quite a lot of traction. However, the appeal of nitrous oxide as a drug choice comes from how it causes its users to experience a sense of euphoria, which is why it has become a very popular party drug, especially in the UK. In terms of recreational use, you often see nitrous stored in canisters and inhaled from balloons. In this form, a nitrous-filled canister is often called a whippet. And while its short-term effects may seem harmless and fun even, when it's overused, nitrous can have very dire consequences.
It causes short-term effects like dizziness, lightheadedness, and euphoria. It makes people feel good. That's why it's called laughing gas. But the long-term effects are no laughing matter, with devastating consequences such as nerve damage, muscle damage, and even an increased risk of heart disease.
One of the reasons why whippets can be very dangerous is because its short-term effects only last for a short time. To account for its high, a user can end up inhaling tons of whippets in a short period and get addicted pretty fast. But that's not all. An overconsumption of nitrous can also lead to a depletion in vitamin B12, a mineral required to keep the body's brain and entire nervous system functioning. Considering that, when someone consumes too much nitrous, they can gain a B12 deficiency, which can lead to permanent nerve damage in the spinal cord. In worst case scenarios, you can lose your ability to stand up and walk.
I now have neuropathy, I have permanent neuropathy in my legs and my lower spinal cord.
And what is that? Just like
neuropathy is nerve damage.
The worst part about all this is that whippets can be acquired as easily as going to any convenience store. People can essentially just buy whipped cream charging bottles and have a whippet on hand. Some vape shops in the US also sell flavored whippets to enhance the experience, quote unquote. On top of being accessible, whippets are also comparatively cheaper than other substances. But despite the tragic stories and undertones behind hip-hop and its relationship with substance abuse, not every rapper has had the same fate as the artists we've been previously discussing. Rather, many hip-hop artists also go out of their way to distance themselves from getting associated with drugs and alcohol, with some even advocating instead for sobriety.
Brothers and sisters that are in the hip-hop game gives kids greater proximity to the issues. You know, it can be a powerful tool to educate, you know, taking stock of what's happening in your community.
While hip-hop's love and hate relationship with substance abuse might never end, at least not in the coming years, the good thing is that not every artist has fallen into the trap of substance abuse. Many hip-hop artists, despite the temptations and just overall image of being a rapper, have resisted the dangerous lifestyle often associated with the genre. One of the most significant voices in the conversation around drug use and hip-hop is Chance the Rapper. In an interview with Complex, Chance shared his drug problems in the past, saying,
I probably would have died. Definitely the way that I was living at that time, I had everything in excess.
He then recounted his early days following the release of his breakout EP, Acid Rap. In the interview, he admitted that his success brought not only fame, but also temptations that led him down a dangerous path, stating,
this is my first time living outside of my parents' house in another city and having money and doing a lot of drugs, like a lot of drugs. And just like becoming a different person, like a lesser person than I am now.
However, Chance didn't let the cycle define him. He decided to stop using drugs, which allowed him to pursue his calling and become a better version of himself.
If I hadn't had my spirit tugged on, literally, and a calling to become a better version of myself, then I would have died for sure. Then I would just be the representative of acid, and I'm so much more.
It's a powerful message of redemption and self-awareness, especially for a genre that often romanticizes drug use. And speaking of powerful messages, one example of a rapper who's been vocal about his struggles with substance abuse, as well as his practice of sobriety, is Kendrick Lamar. One of KDOT's biggest tracks, Swimming Pools, may sound like a party anthem that celebrates alcohol and getting drunk, but when you look deeper into its lyrics, you'll realize that it actually talks about the consequences of peer pressure. But KDOT's advocacies against substance abuse aren't just limited to his songs. Instead, Kendrick has also attempted to turn the reputation of substance abuse and hip-hop on its head, namely, many rappers' obsession with glorifying drugs and alcohol. While speaking to MTV about rappers who keep talking about Molly in their songs, Kendrick said, sometimes you have these trends that are not cool. You may have certain artists portraying these trends and don't really have that lifestyle, and then it gives off the wrong thing, and it becomes kind of corny after a while. It's really about keeping hip-hop original and pushing away the corniness in it. Another rapper who advocated against substance abuse is KDOT's Black KP groupmate and another Cali legend, Schoolboy Q. Q has had a rough history with substance abuse. While speaking with Hip-Hop DX about his third studio album, Oxymoron, one that dabbles with a lot of personal issues, including substance abuse, Q said, I did get addicted to Percocet, sex, cocaine, shit like that. When my daughter was 1 and 2 years old, I used to get into sleep comas, like Xan comas, just dead to the world, and I put it into the music. In fact, Schoolboy Q's addiction got so bad at one point that he was as heavy as 250 pounds, and this pushed him to reduce his substance use. He also stated that Mac Miller's passing also influenced his sobriety. Fortunately, Schoolboy Q eventually managed to kick his bad habits. Another rapper who advocated against substance abuse is J. Cole. Many in the hip-hop community acknowledge Cole for his wordplay, lyricism, and cadence. However, aside from those skills, some people also praise J. Cole for his effort towards using his platform to turn valuable stories into an art form against substance abuse. His award-winning 2018 album, KOD, is filled with anti-drug sentiments, a counterpoint to the glorification of substances in hip-hop. If you didn't know, J. Cole's KOD album stands for three things: Kids on Drugs, King Overdose, and Killer Demons, all of which allude to the album's themes touching upon drugs, alcohol, sobriety, and kicking the habit, so to speak. However, in an ironic way, the same year KOD reigned over the music world with its conscious themes of sobriety and fighting against drugs and alcohol, hip-hop would lose Mac Miller to substance abuse. But not all rappers who are against substance abuse use music to tell their stories. Some rappers have also gone out of their way to advocate against drug use outside of their music. But let's shift this conversation into a different perspective for a bit. We've already discussed how destructive substance abuse is for the hip-hop scene, and we've already gone through the morbid evolution of drugs and alcohol in regards to their relationship with hip-hop. So now, it's time for us to explore the deeper concepts involved in hip-hop's association with substance abuse, the psyche. In recent years, mental health has become an urgent topic in social and cultural conversations. This, of course, also affects the genre of hip-hop. Given that hip-hop as an art form is rooted in lyricism, cultural expression, vulnerability, and internalization, more artists have begun to speak up about their struggles with anxiety, depression, and substance abuse. But historically, these conversations were ignored, hidden beneath layers of stigma within hip-hop culture. And for many, seeking professional help for mental health issues just wasn't an option. Instead, often people turn to substances as a way to cope with their mental illness. This is a part of why we've seen so many artists fall into patterns of addiction and substance abuse. But when we talk about substance abuse in hip-hop, we can't ignore the way cultural stereotypes influence these conversations. It's a common stereotype that minorities, especially in Black communities, are high abusers of drugs and alcohol, specifically in poor neighborhoods. However, statistically speaking, the Caucasian youth are actually abusing drugs and alcohol at higher rates than the African American youth. Still, for many artists, drugs have become a tool to cope with the stresses of life, and in many cases, the untreated mental health issues they're struggling with. As a matter of fact, if we're talking about how crucial it is to actually speak about issues regarding mental health issues and substance abuse in hip-hop, we can shift our attention back to Juice WRLD. Juice WRLD openly struggled with anxiety and depression, and his music was filled with references to these battles. Despite warnings from his friends and family, including his own mother, Juice WRLD's excessive consumption of drugs made him feel invincible. He thought he had everything under control, but as we know now, that wasn't really the case. Juice WRLD's addiction to substances was notable to those closest to him, and despite some reaching out, his inner circle didn't push to get him help. Carmela Wallace, Juice's mom, said in an interview, "I told him of my fears of him overdosing and encouraged him to speak with the psychologist I arranged for him to speak with. But he was 19 and he knew everything. And the people around him, some of them would reach out to me, but not the inner circle." His tragic death at just 21 years old is a reminder of how untreated mental health issues combined with substance abuse can spiral out of control. Another large part of the issue is that hip-hop from the late 1970s to the early 2000s has often celebrated being tough and not showing emotions. This tough guy persona came from neighborhoods with lots of crime, making it hard for rappers, especially men, to admit they were having problems with their mental health, because they grew up in places where showing weakness was looked down on. So many had to act tough and hide their feelings. This mindset of not caring, bottling up emotions, and even turning to violence made it harder for them to talk about their mental health. Another rapper, Offset, a member of the rap group Migos, spoke openly about the issue in a 2019 interview. He said, "There's no such thing as soft. We grown men. A lot of people try to cover it, mental health issues, up, and I can see why. But it's okay to show a vulnerable side as a man. It's really a great thing to do as a man because most men run from it. I feel you're a stronger man when you do that." Offset's words reflect a shift in hip-hop attitudes towards mental health, where more artists speak out and advocate for emotional openness. But the good thing is that, in today's more socially aware generation, artists are increasingly recognizing the importance of mental health and the dangers of glorifying substance use in their music. As the conversation has evolved from simply discussing addiction to emphasizing recovery and the importance of seeking for help.